General Grover, when you before you were involved in the First World War and became a regular soldier, you were at Winchester. To what extent did the sort of education you had at Winchester prepare you for Sandhurst directly?
In those days, the Winchester had what is known as an army class. Now, today you would call it a channel. Boys went through the ordinary curriculum up to a certain level in the school, in my case, just below what is known as sixth book.
Sixth book.
Well, they call them books at Winchester. The
Each.
equivalent of a class,
Oh, I see.
of a division.
Each book sort of represented one year. Did one.
No.
Explain to me a bit about this sixth book. I don't quite understand
At
it.
Winchester, there had originally been six books, starting from one to six. By the time I got there, there were only two books, five book and six books. And the five book was a group of classes. And the sixth book was equivalent to what you call the sixth in any other school today.
So the term book could be, is a
It was
synonym for class, really.
not really. It's
No.
a group of classes, because it covers a whole range up to the sixth. It's one of the peculiarities of Winchester, which is a very old school.
Is it
A lot of
still?
these terms
Yes.
are retained, although they're quite now out of date.
Is this term still used at Winchester
I
today?
don't know. I think so.
So you were in the sixth book.
No, I wasn't. I was in what is known as senior part fifth book,
Yes.
which is the next form below the sixth. But the army class really meant that you specialized with probably certain tutors in subjects which were designed to help you in your entrance exam and as a soldier. In those days, in my case, particularly mathematics, French, but not much in the way of military history.
Yes, I see. Well, what was the size of the army group at Winchester?
Oh, in my days, only about 15 to 20.
So the military group wasn't a large group within your particular public school?
Very small indeed at Winchester, but of course we had an OTC, which was compulsory, and which everybody belonged to after their first year in the school, and where you did the ordinary training of an OTC in those days, including Certificate A, which was a sort of first step towards any kind of graduation.
Yes. Was there any particular traditions within the military group, perhaps say in its relation to the other groups?
None at all. No, just an ordinary member of the school.
Yes. And how much relevant preparation for your later military career did you get from the OTC? What kind of things would you do with them?
Oh, no, the intention really of an OTC in those days was to give you just the basic feel of a kind of knowledge which a private soldier or junior NCO would have.
So
It was meant to start you as a foundation for junior officer leadership. But you would have very little of that.
In practice, what did it involve? Mainly square
No,
parade ground work.
not entirely. You did a certain amount of what was then called field training. You fired a musketry course, they called it. We used to have so-called field days, particularly against other schools.
Tell me about the field days. What did they involve?
Well, usually getting into a train and having a day of work and going somewhere where you had a training exercise in which you fired, if you possibly could, pencils out of your blank cartridges. And you generally made a noise and had quite a good day out and had a jolly good sort of sandwich meal at the end of it, and back you came. It was a very good break in the days in the term. I don't think you learned a great deal out of it.
Was there anything resembling manoeuvres on a competitive basis, perhaps with the other schools who may have been involved?
The nearest thing to that, you see, was the OTC had there were OTC camps at the end of the summer term, which were run by the army, and where schools, contingents, assembled in bulk, in not all in one place, but in two or three different places, and carried out a number of training exercises, and for which they were grouped together into units. That was the nearest form to genuine training. But the rest was meant to give you an elementary foundation of the ABC of what you learn when you first get a scientist or you first become an officer, and with a little leadership in that you had your junior, you had your cadet officers, we had no cadet officers, cadet NCOs.
Can you remember any particular part of the OTC work you did at Winchester with any kind of amusement or particular interest? Were there any highlights to it that stick in your mind?
I don't think so. I'm not sure it was taken very seriously in those days.
Right. Now, in 1914, you successfully took the Sandhurst entry examination.
Yes.
What was the examination like? Do you remember?
Well, I went to Burlington House, and you did I think you've taken Burlington House under the Civil Service Commission. You had a number of papers of various things, ordinary subjects like English, geography, history, mathematics, French, Latin, and you were specialised in a special subject. I think those are the subjects I took.
Yes. Were you given any kind of oral examination?
Only in French.
I see.
For which, to my astonishment, I got 60%. I think that commissioner must have had a lot of easy conscience ever afterwards.
Yes. Now, when you'd taken the examination successfully, you would normally have expected there to have been some gap before you actually
went.
There
was nothing equivalent to the modern interview for going before we went to Sandhurst, the regular commissioners board. Nothing of that sort. All that came in World War II.
Yes. Now, having taken the Sandhurst entry examination, did you expect to go straight into Sandhurst at that point?
To go in the next term. Actually, I went up as a trial run, and if I had been, as I expected, to be head of my house next term, I should have probably stayed another term, Winchester. I probably had to take the exam a second time. And going in January 1915.
What happened in fact?
I was, having seen this message, I just arrived at Sandhurst.
Sorry, having seen what message?
I was on summer holidays, just on my way to Ireland, having just bought a ticket, when I opened the newspaper on the 10th of August, war having occurred on the 4th, and I saw the passing in list to Sandhurst and my name in it, with a notice at the bottom saying all successful candidates are to report to Sandhurst on the 14th of August. So I then lived in Hampshire. I rushed home as quickly as I could and reported myself to Sandhurst on the 14th of August.
Fine. Now, when you got to Sandhurst, how was the course which you were given there affected by the fact that war had broken out?
The course had obviously been well thought out beforehand, because the normal curriculum, which contained a good deal of academic work, military history and that sort of thing, was scrapped entirely. And a special course was introduced at once, which included very much more after the basic drill and physical training, it included much more tactical field work, field engineering, and that kind of thing.
Yes. Tell me a little bit more in detail about some of the aspects of the training course at Sandhurst. For example, one thing you've mentioned is tactical training.
Well, the conception of training in 1914, the outbreak of the war, was largely based on the experience of the Boer War, which meant that the basic weapon from the infantry point of view was the rifle, in which a very high degree of rapid fire, up to 15 rounds a minute with a bolt action weapon, was regarded as essential. There were very few machine guns. There were only two in a battalion, and they were not even taught at Sandhurst. There were no mortars or grenades in those days.
So machine guns weren't even taught at Sandhurst?
Not then. There were no mortars or grenades. They weren't introduced at all on the British side until about 1915 or the end of 14. And we were given very little training in the use of other arms, which then really amounted to artillery because there was no air force. There was only Royal Flying Corps in its infancy. And as regards field engineering, we were taught the basic elements of trench digging and revetting, which we all did actually practically, of improvised bridging over small gaps with using improvised forms of support like barrels and tarpaulin stuff for hay and this sort of thing. I remember very well doing one of those bridges over the in the lake at Sandhurst at night, and one of our less distinguished cadets succeeded in tying his barrel the wrong way up, so that in the morning when we looked at it, of course, it had filled the water, the bung having given way, and the bridge had a horrible sag in the middle. We made him go over it. He fell in just before parade.
Yes. The trench digging, as brought into your training at Sandhurst, did that identically resemble the kind of trench digging which, in fact, you had later to supervise on the Western Front? Or were there differences?
It is very difficult to explain without a long lecture the problem of trench digging. In those days, one was taught to dig a slit in the ground, which was about 2'6" wide at the bottom, about 3'6" wide at the top, about 3 foot below ground level, with what is known as an 18-inch parapet with an elbow rest. So the theory being that you rested your elbow on the parapet and that you shot over it. The depth was, of course, relatively shallow. As soon as the BEF went to France, they quickly found that kind of trench gave totally inadequate cover. And they went over straight away to narrow slit trenches with no parapet for concealment, deeper and narrower, two or three men trenches. And when our first officers came back from the front, we then started to be taught more on those lines. But that really didn't happen when I was at Sandhurst. We were still learning what was known as the basic field engineering as in the pre-war books. And we learnt about the design of trenches and traverses and so on, all very much underestimating the power of modern artillery.
Would it be fair to say that the training you got at Sandhurst in this particular discipline of trench construction didn't really prepare you at this stage for what you actually had to face when you got out to the Western Front?
It gave you some preparation. It taught you, first of all, how to use a pick and spade. And what they also had in those days, which was a little hand entrenching tool, a rather useless weapon. The idea was that if you were lying in an open field or open ground and you had no other cover and you came under fire and couldn't move, you could pull out your little entrenching tool, which you carried across here.
Across your back?
Well, across the lower part of your back.
Yes.
I show you one I've got on here, which I preserved. It's very useful in the garden. And you were able to sort of hack away a bit of cover for yourself, but it was very soon discarded as being rather impractical.
Yes.
But it did give you the basic thing, but of course what one found when you went to France, that no standard form of trench is more than a guide. You've got to adapt any kind of field defence to the conditions. For instance, I spent a lot of time in the Ypres salient, where the water level is just below the surface, and when it rains, the whole thing is just one field of mud. So that everything, all defences have got to be built up, which means that you not only have to build them up with sandbags, but you've got to revet them very strongly. And we had things called A-frames, which were later adapted in the form or shape of the letter A inverted like that, with a place across there to allow a drain out below, and that was the inside of the trench. And those had to fit in, and they were vetted inside. But it gave you a basic idea.
Yes, I see. Now, you mentioned tactical training as well as being one of the training areas at Sandhurst. What did tactical training involve?
Going out and doing field exercises of a very elementary kind of company is the advance guard to a battalion, and it is moving along a road. This is all before the days of armoured vehicles, and the only means of moving was on your feet.